Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April the 15th. Welcome to our commentary. I hope you got your taxes done, or at least you got your extension ready, because this is tax day. And that's always a good day to remember that song by the Beatles, Taxman. Remember that song? I'm the taxman, and you're working for no one but me. Great song. Great song by the Beatles, actually. George Harrison recorded or wrote and was the lead vocalist on that song, one of the better songs from the album Revolver. Anyway, a little Beatle history there for you. I have a couple of posts over at the American Thinker today, and I have one about the White House. I mean, look, they're pretty much out of ideas. So the First Lady goes in front of an LGBTQ group, and she's like scaring them, saying that somehow if Donald Trump is elected, that, you know, marriage equality and all kinds of things are at risk. And that somehow, not only that, but gays are not going to be able to donate blood. I mean, all kinds of scary things. I mean, absolutely idiotic stuff that they're putting out there just because they cannot defend his record. I mean, this is peddling fear. And it's a shame that the First Lady is doing it. That's the biggest shame of all. Let's talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend. You know, Iran sent in a bunch of missiles or drones or whatever to Israel. Obviously, that's a very bad thing. But 99% of them were apparently destroyed, and a lot of it with U.S. assistance. So I want to congratulate President Biden on that one. I think it was the right thing to do to protect Israel from these attacks. And I also want to congratulate the pilots and the people managing this equipment. I think it was very good, excellent that we did that. And as a consequence, 99% of them didn't go make it through, which is the reason I believe only one person was injured. I think there is a little girl somewhere who was injured because it landed near a base or something and she was injured. So I think overall, very, you know, successful defense of Israel. And, you know, let's congratulate everybody concerned when it comes to that. I do believe the White House made two mistakes with respect to all of this. The first mistake is that the president did not address the nation. Now, that I think is a mistake. You know, we've grown accustomed to the idea that at moments like this, that the president will at least speak to the nation. He doesn't have to speak from the Oval Office, but he can go to the press room and make a statement or read something. We didn't get that from President Biden. I think that's a mistake. The second thing, and this is a bigger mistake, is somebody, I don't know who was leaking this this information, but somebody at the White House leaked the information that we apparently told the Prime Minister of Israel that we would not support any counterattack against Iran. That is a big mistake. That is a big mistake, because that tends to show right there a little amount of conditional support for Israel, and that we shouldn't be doing that at a time like this. The signal that everybody needs to hear is that we will support Israel and that we will support them if they have to defend themselves. So I think that was a mistake. That was a mistake. Whether they meant to leak it or not, it's out there, and the White House has not denied it. So let's, for the time being, we have to accept it as what it is. So we'll see what happens. But that, I thought that was a very bad idea to leak a phone call like that, or the transcript or the information or the content of a phone call like that between the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Israel at a moment when Israel is really vulnerable to such an attack in the future. Big story, of course, in New York City today is this latest, or I guess this is the first actual trial of President Trump. Look, this is a travesty. This whole thing is a travesty. And I have friends in New York who think it's also a travesty. I mean, they're sitting there saying, you know, we're spending millions of dollars going after Donald Trump, and our subways are dangerous, our streets are dangerous. You know, these thousands of bodegas in New York City where the owners of these bodegas are unsafe because of criminals running the streets and causing all kinds of problems. So this is very bad. It's also very bad for justice, because in order to get to this case, they had to change things like the statute of limitations. And that's a very bad thing. That's a bad idea when you have to change the laws, or you have to change the way that business has been done to go after a political opponent. And that's another important point. They're going after a political opponent, and they're doing it in the middle of an election. Look, I think this is all going to backfire on the Democrats. I mean, take it. I mean, go ahead and let me just tell you right now, I think this is all going to backfire. It's already backfiring if you look at the polling data, but I think it's really going to backfire, and it's going to backfire because we now have information from polling data that Americans actually are looking back at the Trump administration and saying, you know, it was actually pretty good for us. That Trump administration was actually pretty good for us. And of course, they're talking about things like the price of gasoline, the cost of living, and just the overall chaos on the border. I mean, that alone is the weakest part of the Biden reelection. And then you look at the world. I mean, you look around the world, and it's like everybody's gone crazy since Biden came in. I think a lot of it had to do, by the way, with the way we left Afghanistan. I think that sent a message around the world that we were not serious about protecting the United States. So clearly, people are looking back at the Biden, at the Trump administration, and saying, you know what, the guy was pretty good. The guy was pretty good. He's a lot better than what we have now. And that, I think, is part of the reason, of course, why Trump is looking better and better, better and better all the time. So, so I think that, you know, this trial simply confirms what many, many of us have been saying for some time, that these trials are completely political. They're driven by politics. You know, I was listening to Professor Dershowitz, who's not a Republican. In fact, he constantly says, I'm not voting for Trump. I don't want to vote for Trump. But he's an honest man. He's an honest liberal who's looking at all of this and saying, hey, I mean, this is crazy. We're inventing crimes and we're changing the rules. So I don't know where this is going to go. I guess, but I know politically where it's going to go, but I mean, from a judicial standpoint, I don't know what comes next. I guess the key here is that you get some members of the jury who say no, not guilty. And if that happens, then this whole thing is blown away. But given the venue, given that this is happening in New York City, you know, you've got to believe that they're going to figure out how they get 12 people on that jury who will convict Donald Trump. And if they do, I think that is going to be just a total travesty for the country. And it's a real, another thing too, and it's really bad for New York City, the image of New York City. New York City has become almost clownish in the views of particularly investors. I mean, more and more investors are saying, wait a minute, what's going on with the New York judicial system? At one time, it was regarded as is one of the most serious places to do business because of the legal system. And now you got these district attorneys literally changing the rules, going after political opponents. You have an attorney general who ran saying, vote for me and I'm going to get Donald Trump. Well, that's not good. That is not good. And that is eventually going to return Donald Trump to the White House. And it's going to do a lot of harm to the New York judicial system. I keep thinking there's got to be somebody in New York with a serious person in New York who basically tells the governor, you got to stop all of this. You got to stop all this garbage because you're hurting New York a lot more than you're hurting Donald Trump. So we'll keep an eye on this trial. From what I understand, it could take a couple of months, maybe Memorial Day by the time it's all said and done. And what a waste of money and waste of resources in New York, a city where crime is rampant and everything is out of control. I mean, just absolutely. I mean, just try taking a subway in New York. I mean, how many of you would want your wife or your daughter or your sister on a subway in New York? I don't think too many of us would appreciate that because it's very unsafe. The whole city is very, very unsafe, which is why people are moving out, which is why businesses are closing. And by the way, I just saw a report today that tax collection is way down in New York because, you know, business is down, obviously. People can't pay taxes if they're not doing business. A couple of things on this day in history, April 15th. April 15th, 1865. This is the day that President Lincoln officially died. Of course, he was shot the night before. They rushed him to that house across from the location, and he was in a room there and being treated constantly. And around 7 o'clock in the morning, he was officially pronounced dead. I don't think there was ever a chance, certainly not from what we read. I don't think he ever had a chance of surviving that shot. I mean, it was right behind his head. So I think he probably lasted a lot longer than most people thought he would, but he passed away. He was pronounced officially dead at about 7:30 in the morning. And then that's when the Secretary of War came up with one of the greatest lines of American history. You know, after he realizes that President Lincoln is dead, he says, "Now he belongs to the ages." One of the great lines. "Now he belongs to the ages." And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, I've always felt that Abraham Lincoln and George Washington were the two greatest presidents. Hard to pick which one because they both had different contributions to American history, but definitely one or two in that area. And then on this day in 1945, Jackie Robinson made his major league debut with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And by the way, we're going to be talking a little bit about that when we chat with our friend Bill Katz, who's from Brooklyn and remembers his whole thing when Jackie Robinson made his debut on this day in 1945. He was playing first base for the Brooklyn Dodgers, and that, of course, broke the color line. And then after that, other black players came to the major league. So Jackie Robinson, and by the way, today being Jackie Robinson Day, all of the major league teams today are going to be wearing number 42, Jackie's number with the Brooklyn Dodgers. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a wonderful day, and thanks for tuning in and commenting, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.